Cisco ACR this week, Ethan. What'd you think?
Well, there was so much hoopla and buildup to this announcement. It's finally nice to actually have the details of what Insemi's been up to all this time and get some details on it. So it's good. We got details, but not a lot of the super in-depth stuff that I was looking for, which is really how it works. But I got a lot of the nuts and bolts of the pieces that are holding it together, and it's been a good start. I've watched a lot of videos, read a lot of data sheets, and I'm starting to wrap my brain around what Cisco's pushing out the door there. So, early impressions from you?
Very exciting, actually. It's exactly the right product. So, if I was, if I could imagine what I would have done in that situation, I would want something that leveraged my strengths. And my strengths are that I've got all this hardware, I've got all this incumbent people. I want them to transition to SDN because, at least there's a competitive space where there's people taking away my networking from me. So I have to take all these people who've got physical networking and I have to take them where I'm going. And so the big things that they've emphasized that I saw was we can give your existing network compatibility with the SDN network. So don't panic about SDN. We've got you covered. We can take your existing network and we can get you there. That was the sort of message I got.
Well, there was that. Of course, they also introduced new hardware as well. I mean, they made a very big deal about the Nexus 9000 products that bring in at supposedly a very competitive price point.
Well, so in the presentation, they talked about delivering 266 10 gig Ethernet ports for about $75,000. That probably doesn't include optics and some cables, but still, if at that price, that if you round it out, let's say that there's about $30,000 or $40,000 worth of optics and stuff, then that is competitive with what Dell and HP and others are doing for that sort of density.
Well, plus they've gone out of their way with the 40 gig optics. If we want to talk about them specifically, they got the new Bidur optic. Mm-hmm. That will deliver 40 gigabits per second across an optic that's a one-for-one swap for your 10 gig optic. You can run it over OM3 multimode fiber, a single pair of fiber, and get 40 gig out of it. They're doing multiple 20 gig channels and two different light waves coming out of that optic, meaning you can keep your existing cabling plan. So as far as moving to 40 gig, it's not 12 optics anymore that are required to make that go. You've got it down to a single pair. You've got a migration path from 10 to 40 gigs. So from a cost standpoint there, you were mentioning optics and cabling earlier. Obviously, they're really trying to keep that cost down for people and give them that migration path over to 40 gig.
So some questions there. How cheap is that optic? Because you can get very cheap cabling systems using cassette systems. Remember I've talked about cabling where it's click and clack? Mm. I've got a name for it now. It's called a cassette system where you use a modular piece of cabling and you have a very long patch lead. So you can now buy 50-meter patch leads with 24 calls in them.
Yeah, seen them. Yeah.
And you've seen at the shows where they have the, you plug the MPO connector into the back and there you go, there's 12 fibers. It's not a... I'm not sure. I mean, it's an innovation by all means, using one pair.
So the question is, though, for the customers that aren't already invested in that density of fiber in their data centers, and I'll argue that most aren't, that most people already have a high utilization of the fiber pairs that they've already got installed, and they're looking at 40 gig and going, that means I need a whole lot more fiber, a whole lot more glass running my data center than I've got today. Mm. Now they don't have to think about that anymore. Now it's the investment that I've already made in my fiber plan stands. I don't need more strands. I don't need more pairs to go to 40 gig. Mm. I can do it over 10 gig. So I'm not saying that the fiber, I'm not saying it's difficult to assemble it. I'm just saying there's people that aren't there today that now don't have to go there. They can stick with their LC patch leads, patch paneling system they've already got, OM3 multimode fiber they've already got, and they don't need an additional pair count to go to that. Now, the cost of the 40 gig optic itself, I'm not sure about, but I suspect, any Cisco branded optic's always a bit pricey, right?
Yeah.
But I suspect this one is going to be priced competitively. To help make it compelling for customers.
It'll be easy for customers to buy. They'll be comfortable with, if I put this optic in and I can use my existing LC and my one pair of MMF, then that makes it easy for customers to understand, and that will lead to a simple purchase. That would be my, you know. Of course, just to give you a comparison, Arista earlier in the week announced some stuff, some new switches and stuff that it raced out the door. Obviously, you know, to get some column inches before Cisco ACI got out. And they had a 40 gig BIDIR, but running over single mode.
Which is going to be much less likely to be widely deployed in data centers. Multi-mode is much more typically going to be out there. So,
yeah,
single mode is going to be a much harder sell, I think.
Yes, I agree. And I think the point that was made to me was, I said, you know, why not multi-mode? Why single mode? And they sort of said, well, most of the data centers that Arista are targeting are new build. And so they're saying to them, why don't you go and put SMF in everywhere, and that'll give you a 20-year capability. Whereas if you've got MMF, you're really only going to get another 5 or 10 years out of it. So Arista sort of said, well, we could go to the legacy market or we could go to the new build market. We're going to go new build, and that's a decision. I'm sure flip side of that, of course, is once the 40 gig BIDIR optics become standardized, then it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm sure Arista will be able to get the same thing. So,
I expect, although we've gone on a rabbit trail about, you know, optics, I mean, that's just one piece of, you know, a much larger overall ACI strategy that's out there, which is a mix of hardware and software. We've been talking about the hardware, the Nexus 9000 switches.
Yeah, let's finish off talking about those. Two things about the Nexus 9000s that come to mind. One is they're made with a mix of Broadcom Trident 2 silicon that we've seen in lots of different places. And Uncle John said in his presentation that we see merchant silicon being a time to market, cost effective, and good performance. I can't remember the exact wording of the third one, and I haven't had a chance to go back and look at the video again. But there was three things he said: time to market, cost effective, and capability. He said, but don't forget that we've got our, and I'm paraphrasing again, so please excuse me if I'm wrong, but he said, you know, we've got our own custom silicon, and our own custom silicon has better features and faster speeds and better overall capabilities. And the Nexus 9000 has both. It has both the Broadcom merchant silicon, and it also has Cisco's ACI silicon in the computer, in the switch architecture.
Yes.
The switch architecture is different to everything that we're used to, compared to the way that the 7000 was put together. So the 7000.
Well, you're talking about the 9000 chassis, the 9508.
Big chassis are they're put together differently, as I understand it. They're not.
Yeah, there are line cards, and then there are fabric modules. The 9508 will go up to six different fabric modules in the back, and then it's an 8-slot chassis. Every line card that you put into the 9500 connects directly to each fabric module. So internally in the switch, you've effectively got a spine leaf architecture.
That's right. Which is also not the way the 7000 is built, though. The 7000 doesn't work that way. It works slightly differently. It has those fabric interface modules at the back of the line card, and it's like a three-stage, whereas I'm not sure if I'm explaining this well, and we don't have a lot of information, but the 9000 has like a two-stage cloth fabric, and the 7000 is more like a three-stage, I think. I could be wrong there.
7000, I'm not sure. I know one of the interesting things about the 9000, I was watching one of the presentation videos. Lillian Kwan did a couple of packet walkthroughs of the 9508. They're up on YouTube. You can search for the Nexus 9000 and watch her go through those. The fabric modules have their own forwarding engine in them as well. So there's actually a multi-lookup process. It hits the line card, does a lookup. The line card can switch it locally or kick it up to the fabric card, which then does a lookup and forwards appropriately where it needs to go. And that's both for unicast and multicast traffic. So that's a bit different. Typically, forwarding tables aren't living in fabric modules.
No. And again, there are other vendors who have a similar architecture for their product. I won't name them because I don't want to get into a, you know, competitive analysis. But that design seems to fit the Broadcom Trident 2. So it's reasonably natural, but it's different from the way that other switches in the Cisco line have been put together.
It is, yeah, for sure.
And
now, the fixed config switches, I haven't gotten to see any of the internals on to know what's going on there. I happened to catch these two YouTube videos on the 9500 with Lillian that were insightful in that. The fixed config 9500s they're not 9500s, they're 9300s, I believe, are more targeted at, we want to get you top of rack, middle of row, kind of a solution, and give you a lot of port density so you can hook everything in with 9300s at the access layer, 9500s at the access layer or the aggregation layer, and then do ACI magic on top of all that.
It's probably a good point to point to, at this point, to talk out that the 9000 comes in two modes. There's standard mode or classic mode, which is exactly the way that we run our switches today, and there's an operating system that goes, you can go and buy the Nexus, some of the Nexus 9000, the smaller models, you can buy them today, as I understood it, and they can run what they call NXOS Classic, so that means they run Spanning Tree and MLAG and all that sort of stuff. And then in the future, sometime, I think middle of next year, could be wrong, we'll have a new version of the operating system, which I think is currently named NXOS Plus, which will be the version which is actually ready to do the SDN functionality on those devices. And that will then enable this ACI silicon, this other custom Cisco silicon, which will then be SDN ready.
And that's the part that maybe you've heard something that I haven't. I haven't heard too much detail on exactly what the custom silicon is and what it's delivering and so on. Kind of a high-level stuff with, well, we know there's programming happening in the Cisco via the Cisco One environment. We know there's the APIC controller that can be used to define policy built around the context of an application and then push that policy down into the network devices. But more of the mechanics of exactly what's going on, I haven't heard too terribly much about.
Yeah, I could guess some stuff. I mean, the Broadcom Trident 2 chipset, the people who get involved with Open Daylight and OpenFlow have told me there's certain physical limitations inside of the chip. It can only have about 4,000 flow entries, maybe 2,000, 2 to 4,000 flow entries. Now, if you figure that if you're using a VXLAN-enabled backbone like what ACI wants to do, like what the APIC controller, it needs to set up VXLAN overlays for each flow category, for each variety of flow category that you want to create. So you're very quickly going to run out of flow entries in the Trident 2s. And I think this ACI chip, now absolutely could be wrong, we just don't have the information yet. Some data sheets don't talk about this, and I suspect this is something that we won't find more about until in the new year. But my guess would be is that it's some sort of onboard controller capability where it will actually only load the flow entries to the Tridents that need to be for that port group or that chip. And there's a clever piece of interaction going on, you know, like consider for example that every line card has to have all flow entries because it might receive them, but you don't want to load all the flow entries or the VXLAN entries into every chip because it doesn't need them, right? Every port processor. So you need to do some smart stuff. So my guess would be is that that's what's happening.
That seems plausible. It's interesting the point you raised about the dependency on VXLAN encapsulation to do a lot of the magic. I know in one of the briefings that I think you and I were both on, there was a mention made that there were some extensions being made to VXLAN to carry to describe some unique properties of the payload within the packet that VXLAN had encapsulated, so therefore it could be treated in an appropriate way. Do you remember any of the details on that?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
Yeah, now that you mention it, yeah, I do. We're talking about VXLAN using VNTAG and VNLink. That's the technology that Cisco UCS uses when the UCS NXOS 2100 network adapter talks to the UCS Fabric Interconnect. And that's how they do FEX. So VNTAG and VNLink is FEX. Same thing for 2000, 5000 when FEX is being used. Now, quite what this means in this environment, I wouldn't want to say anything more than VXLAN using VNTAG or VNLink in some way is what's being used to provide the enhanced signaling. And because I don't think it can be just VXLAN that they're using here. And but we should wait until we get some information from Cisco rather than go herring off in any direction and speculating.
We would never do that on the Packet Pushers podcast. That's just
I think I mean, it comes back to you know, this is the early stage of a very complex product, in the same way that it took us 2 years to talk about OpenFlow and then controllers and then applications, you know, learning about how the ACI architecture comes together. You know, it's still got, you know, physical forwarding plane with flow management of some sort using, you know, whatever it is, VXLAN or whatever. And then there's the APIC controller, which is both application and controller in a single software element. So, you know, it's going to take a while.
It is early. And I think that the fact that it's early speaks to what Cisco could really do with this thing long term. Now, following certain of the folks that have been tied up in this project on Twitter,
Mike DeVorkin.
Yes. And Joanna Sek and some others have, you know, the point had come up, well, couldn't this whole application-centric infrastructure model be extended to include Cisco UCS? And the answer came back, oh, yes, you know, definitely. That was the impression I got, that that was part of where this whole thing was headed. So today we're talking about controlling the network with Nexus 9000 switches that are in ACI mode and some custom silicon to make that happen. And then moving forward, the automated provisioning and so on that's been sent down to switches will be extended to the UCS server infrastructure as well, so that you can have a Cisco branded everything from top to bottom that you manage in a fully integrated and centralized way. And that seems logical to me if you consider VMware as a possible target here. And, you know, VMware would say, hey, we're bringing it all to the table now, because, of course, they've been doing virtualization on the server side for many, many years and very well, and they're the dominant player in that space. Now they've added NSX, and they're doing their flavor of network virtualization. And they, and VMware wants to be your one-stop shop. Well, if Cisco continues down this road with ACI, they have some success and begin to, you know, and then add UCS to the mix. Well, now there's kind of a one-for-one, apples-to-apples comparison there as far as the functionality that the end user gets. Not that the implementation details are the same, because obviously they're not, but from a customer perspective, looking at the two solutions, they'd be fairly close to on par at that point, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I think the general thrust is, so from Cisco's point of view, the value add to the customer is they can provide a software-defined network for any application, any server, any application, any operating system. So while VMware can only today network hypervisors, ESX hypervisors with the NSX agent in them using their SDN strategy, Cisco can use, in the long term, the UCS would integrate with this ACI strategy and integrate with the APIC. And it doesn't matter whether you're running bare metal Solaris on Cisco's UCS or Microsoft's Hyper-V or KVM, OpenStack, at the logical level. Now, let's forget the software on the top here, because we'll get to some of the theory around the metadata in a minute. But at the down at the network adapter level and what's actually happening right there at the edge, you know, in we've talked before about, you know, we've got to do more than just say the edge of the network is at the physical port, which is what we're doing today. We've got to get beyond the physical port to some other abstract metadata, you know, by IP for subnet or by VLAN to go to do automatic recognition. And that's where ACI is heading.
Yes, it is.
So, but the flip side is the SDN vendors can also enable switches to do some of this. Cisco can do physical integration better than anybody else because they make the switches, they have the advanced capabilities and the design team. But I suspect over time is that OpenFlow type functions in the switch now, you know, or VTEP or OVSDB and OFconfig, you know, there's a whole bunch of other things over here that could do this, that it's certainly possible for the other SDN people who are software only today to integrate tighter with the network over time. I think Cisco's got a major competitive advantage here in that they've come early to the, you know, automating the physical network in that sense.
Which is something VMware has been trying to downplay. Cisco's made the point, hey, if you control the hardware, then you have true insight into what an application traffic flow looks like as it goes through each device along the network. Whereas if you're doing a pure overlay and you're blind to the hardware that's underneath, then you implicitly can't really see as effectively what's going on and then manage that traffic. You know, Cisco's made that argument. VMware's kind of gone the other way and said, no, visibility is not a problem we have. We can see things just fine with NSX. Thank you very much. And then they describe how they do that. Mm. But I tend to agree with you. There's been a real tendency on the part of a lot of the SDN folks to downplay the significance of hardware. But at the end of the day, the hardware still matters. You're forwarding traffic through a piece of hardware. You're forwarding traffic through silicon, and you need to have insight into what's going on as that traffic flows across your environment. You need metrics. You need information on latency. You need to know when traffic's being dropped. You need to know, and then moving back up to the application layer, you need to be able to see all the way into a packet to know what that traffic is that's being carried and therefore how to treat it. You know, Cisco grasps all of that, and they're addressing all of those tiers directly. They're taking them on head on. I think VMware, again, tends to... We have all the intelligence out here at the edge and the hypervisor, and we have all that insight, and everything's fine, nothing to worry about here. And I don't know that that's really fair of them to put it that way.
Yeah, I don't want to get into a VMware versus ACI discussion today. I think that's something we'll do as more comes out. Maybe we just focus on the what we know so far, perhaps.
Oh, fine. Run away.
I agree with you, right? In principle, that the weakness in the NSX strategy, and I think I've written about this in articles, is that the lack of visibility into the network. And I think I've seen some blog posts from NSX and some discussion about how NSX is going to solve that problem without needing to be physically integrated with the network. I'll wait until that's announced or we get more insight into that before we start talking about that. But one thing I wanted to, I think we could keep going. We've done the hardware.
Yep.
Otherwise, one thing about the hardware is that as long as it's cheap, because, for example, recently a lot of the other people have been playing very little for 10 gig interfaces. For example, Dell's S6000, 32 ports off 40 gig, is astonishingly cheap. It's like less than $30,000 on the street. So you can actually get these switches very, very cheaply, and I think that Cisco has actually come to meet this pricing is very good for customers who are Cisco customers, because they'll be able to not, you know, be faced with the walking away, you know, with what do we do, how do we stick with whatever.
Well, I haven't seen pricing myself, but again, to reiterate the point from earlier, it does seem like the message is very strong on this is going to be very aggressively priced.
Yep.
The 9000 product line specifically, and yeah. It makes sense that it would be, just considering mm-hmm. merchant silicon, etc.
But it's not going to. So the last thing I wanted to say is it's not going to look like a 7000. It'll have no service modules. It'll have no MPLS, no fancy features. It'll have very little QoS, very little. I don't know if it'll have very little QoS, but I suspect it will have very little, because those are all silicon functions, and I suspect that there's only a limited amount of capability in the silicon to do some of those things. So be aware of that.
Support FCOEs. There's going to be some sort of prioritization scheme available for sure.
Sure.
I'd have to go back and look at the data, look at the data sheets, because they do spell out what all is there. But
so maybe what I should have said is not as sophisticated as a 7000.
I tend to agree with that, yeah. Mm.
It does. One last thing is that the Nexus 6000, which is a leaf spine architectured switch, I'm not sure whether the 6000 will survive if the 9000 is here. But
that crossed my mind as I was reading through, going, boy, it's getting complicated to try to position all of these switches, because the port densities and the performance look comparable. And so it ends up, you end up in a 6000. Because there's some very specific feature set that you want. Now, interestingly, one of those features might be Fabric Path. If I remember right, I don't think the 9K does Fabric Path. Maybe I'm wrong there.
No, it's Layer 3. If I remember rightly, and it could be wrong, The NXOS Classic mode only supports Layer 3 ECMP. There is no Layer 2 ECMP, so no fabric path, no trill. You can't run VLANs end-to-end on a fabric. You know what I mean?
Yes, so that may be the sell right there for the 6000. Yep. Is it'll do all those things. It'll do all the rich features and fancy encapsulations that the 9000 will be somewhat more limited in what it can do. Because what struck me as I was going through the 9000 data sheets, they present in at least one of them like three different architectures of how you would deploy this thing, meaning 9000s. And I was like, wow, it looks like an Arista architecture. Layer 3 ECMP, large leaf spine, everybody running to everyone else. And that's where I was, what I was left with. Boy, I think it does 64-way ECMP, and just very reminiscent of the architecture, that what Arista would call their universal network architecture that they got excited about when they launched the 7500E line cards with that fairly cheap.
So that's not unique to Arista. That's also Dell and Mellanox and a bunch of other vendors based on the Trident chipset. They all use similar templates for their designs. So certainly Arista's done a better job of packaging that and then calling it their spline architecture, which is tremendous.
You got to respect the people sitting in the conference rooms coming up with marketing names.
That's right. It's better.
No one's got this one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll call it spline. There you go.
Spline, yeah. Well, I'm not sure a spline actually has a name, but it's a gear. But anyway, so... type mechanical engineering coming through. So software, let's start off with some software. So one of the things we probably want to talk about is that we didn't see a demo of the software. I don't know if you saw it anywhere.
No, have not yet.
No, and they didn't, while they talked about the software architecture, we didn't see anything that I could hang my hat on around the product. So we don't know what the product looks like. I haven't heard of anybody in the marketplace who's seen what it looks like, but everybody's been sold on the vision and the strategy.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, and they are making noises about integrating firewall services, for example. So it's not strictly a forwarding play or a network virtualization play up through layer 3. It sounds like there's value-add services on top of that as well. And there's a virtual switch here that we haven't mentioned yet that's a part of this too. That's not the Nexus 1000V. They called it the application virtual switch, I think, AVS. That fits into this architecture as well.
And it wasn't part of the announcement. It was specifically not mentioned, as far as I know, can recall, during the presentation.
So there is a YouTube video with Gary Kinghorn and Balaji Siva about AVS, because if you want to do ACI architecture all the way out to the virtual edge, you can't do it with 1000V. You need to do it with this new virtual switch, AVS. And they talk about how customers that are invested in 1000V get over to AVS and what the function crossover is between the two and how they're different and so on. But yet another pretty important piece of the overall strategy.
Definitely. So that solves the physical and the virtual switching. We don't, I mean, not much more we can talk about the virtual switch because it's, again, very early there. And it looks, I mean, I came away from watching that video thinking, looks, sounds a lot like the Nexus 1000V, but it's not the same.
Right. That's where I was too.
So it's different. Yes. It's got all of the ACI.
The key difference is the programmatic interface and its ability to speak to ACI overall. Now, so do we want to speculate on what the software is going to look like?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the APIC, we know that APIC, Application Programmable Infrastructure Controller, is what it stands for. And it will be the network controller, the thing that draws together all of the configuration from the devices. So let's, in a very real sense, what happens in the physical network is all set by the devices themselves. So now we're back in the area of network controllers and SDN and, OpenFlow managers and applications and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to forget about physical networking for the next section of what we talk about, I guess, is the first thing to call out. So application programmable infrastructure controller is a networking software that interfaces to all the switches and all of the virtual switches in the long term. It has southbound APIs that talk down to all of the supported devices, which is going to be the Nexus 9000 in the short term. And it also talks northbound to a range of other devices. So the APIC will, Cisco was at pains to point out their launch partners like F5, EMC, you know, a range of companies, but they're the two that are on top of my head, who are announcing that they will commit developer resources to integrating with APIC in the near future. So APIC will either be able to control them, so that is to send configuration to an F5, or to receive inputs from higher level applications. So there are tools in the CA portfolio like Cloud Manager. There are tools in the EMC portfolio around with storage management who would want to know that the FCOE interface is doing things. So the EMC controller needs to talk sideways to the APIC to do share configuration data. And the visibility component of APIC would also have to find its feet, and it would need to be able to either poll the network or to launch or to talk northbound to the interfaces, which can show you what's happening in the logical network.
And presumably there's going to be a policy manager piece. They've actually talked at length about that, how policies are built and then how that policy is defined by the network operators, built around the context of an application and getting that application delivered, and then how that policy is translated into commands that then program the network via those southbound APIs and make the network do what it needs to do to support that application. And I know there is a function called support group function here. I'm forgetting the name of it exactly. Another YouTube video that I watched that Joe Onosek describes that, and he makes the point that when you create these group of objects that you'll use to define your policy, you're not limited to things that we're accustomed to, like IP addresses and TCP or UDP ports, let's say, but there can be other attributes as well. And he was fairly open-ended as far as what that could be. He didn't get real specific, but it sounds like there are other sorts of application attributes that can be used to therefore define this traffic belongs to this policy, and this policy will define how that traffic is to be treated as it goes across the network.
Yes. So that comes back to previous discussions we've had around OpenFlow and how do we identify what it is that what is the intent of what you want to do. Now, I know you were on holidays last week, but I recorded a show with Mike DeVorkin, who is the architect of, he's the chief science officer at Cisco in CIMI, and he, we recorded it ahead of the launch, so we weren't able to call it out too much, but he talks about the fundamental theory behind the APIC controller is based on a concept of promise theory, that is that a device or an element promises to deliver something, and from the promise you can actually then extend into taking intent, the intent to deliver something from a promise or a commitment, and then you can build a mathematical architecture around that that a software can model. So you can take have we conceptually, and I don't, again, you know, we've talked about NewArch Networks and their policy template model for software. Remember we were at Field Day and they talked a lot about how they use a policy architecture to define, you know, to cascade down the capabilities that you want before you get the final set of rules which deploy to the controller.
They do that, and the other folks do a similar kind of a thing. Anuta, which is more of an orchestration solution than SDN, even has that general kind of a concept. Yeah.
Yeah. So these policy, if I understand APIC correctly, they use promise theory to calculate hierarchical policy templates, which results in you cascade down through a list of possible policies. And at the end, you can say for a given flow, here's the final calculation against it.
Now I'm going to have to read up on that. That is a new one to me, promise theory. So I'll go back and listen to that show and then dive in a little bit. Interesting.
Yeah. So very briefly, promise theory is based around a guy called Mark Burgess, who developed a thing called CF Engine. And CF Engine is the precursor to Puppet and Chef. in terms of automated system deployment in a real way, CF Engine sort of like a big picture, and Puppet and Chef sort of pick out some smaller parts of it to make it more manageable and then goes off and does that piece. But CF Engine is the hierarchical daddy of this automated deployment systems across the thing. It's been around for quite some time. For I think I've been looking at CF Engine on and off for about 8 or 9 years. Anyway, Mark Burgess developed this promise theory and then turned it into CF Engine, which is being used to automate systems. So I guess but what's the reality of this? How do we turn this sort of theory in? Well, what Cisco's doing with Epic is they're saying the controller platform that they're building can actually talk about endpoints. So it can actually take the data and emulate VLANs. It can create combinations of endpoints by IP subnet, by virtual port and physical port, or either. So you can do it via DNS name. You can even create port endpoint groups or port group concepts by virtual machine attributes. So maybe you want to say all of Linux machines with the first three letters in their name of this in the DNS name need to be gathered together into a VLAN of this. They need to be able to communicate with each other on these IP addresses. That's how I understood it.
Now, that crosses over into some of the concepts I've heard come out of Plexi with their, well, to a point with the data services engine, but also their notion of how they build affinities and getting into a lot of flexibility in how you design and build an affinity. It's reminiscent of that, how much of the theory and the implementation bleeds over in their actual algorithms. I'm not sure, but there is, I think there's some conceptual crossover there.
Yeah, I guess the thing that strikes me about this is if you think that a VLAN is like metadata and IP subnet, you know, what IP subnet does this belong? Well, that's a piece of metadata. Is the DNS name's a piece of metadata. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a flow that's going across your network, that flow has a piece of multiple pieces of metadata attached to it. It came from this server. It's going to that server. It's from this application because a server might have multiple applications but have multiple flows. So application is a piece of metadata. The trick about SDN for any vendor is how they get that metadata and match it to a flow. And that's the purpose of the controller. So Cisco's Epic controller is unique, as I see it today, in that it's the only one that's able to program physical ports as well as virtual ports. But the piece that's missing for me right now is how the Epic attaches to VMware or Microsoft's Hyper-V or even further up the stack. How does it get into the operating system to detect the flows right out at the edge?
Well, in theory, those APIs from VMware, et cetera, that expose the inner workings of their system are accessible. And they have those relationships. Those could be formed in that way. And again, to bring up Plexi, I know that they are doing some of exactly that. They're building huge sets of metadata by going right up to a VMware box, let's say, and then mining as much data as they can get out of it using those APIs. So in theory, Cisco APIC could be doing exactly the same thing. If there's an API there to expose a chunk of metadata that would be interesting, go get it.
True. OpenStack has something similar. Hyper-V is, I guess if you're talking about, we spoke earlier about the application virtual switch. Mm-hmm. If you put the application virtual switch into the operating system, not just the hypervisor, but actually, you know, as a network driver or like in the UCS chassis, you get, you know, really deep visibility into what's going on the operating system and above.
I agree with that, yeah. Then it becomes more an issue of, the hard part isn't getting the data. It's now how do we make all this presentable and useful to an algorithm and move ahead from there? Or if not, Plexi tries to automate a lot of the stuff. And I got the feeling watching some of the videos built around the ACI launch that it's less about automating policy and more about giving operators powerful tools to build the policy they want to build. Is that do you get the distinction I'm making there?
Yeah,
do you think that's fair?
Yeah. So where Plexi says we've got this system, you can now do the integration. Your applications can now talk to us. We've got all the APIs ready for you to consume.
And, And plus, they'll take all the data and model the network, Plexi will, and come up with their own baseline of what they think the affinity should look like and what the network topology and priorities should be for the affinities that they've discovered. You don't have to get in the middle of it if you don't want to. Mm. I think the APIC approach is more, they're looking for human-engineered policies here, yep. And they'll allow you to do that based on a much richer set of items now. But I don't think they're going to automate the flow of traffic across the network exactly. I don't want to misstate that. I'm drawing a very subtle distinction here because obviously automation is a big part of what the whole ACI infrastructure will do. I'm just saying, whereas the Plexi model is, they've got this image of, depending on what the current moment's traffic looks like, the network topology that they're building can shift around, all of which is very dependent on working with their switches and their hardware. The Cisco approach, I think you're going to end up with a more of a static instantiation of what the network looks like based on a policy that you've built.
Yeah, yes, that's right. So I guess Cisco can be more embracing. They have the market heft to be able to say we can talk to not only to our devices and build an entire product of a controller. And I mean, the controller is a serious undertaking. Don't underestimate just how much work it takes to build a APEC and to code it and test it and validate it to the level.
Any controller, I've been hearing stories coming out of the Open Daylight project of the challenges they're running into there. But yeah. Mm.
So, it's not an insignificant, don't just think it's like, whipping up a bit of a PHP script and away you go. It's actually got an awful lot of, I have a lot of respect for people who undertake that challenge. So just to be realistic about that, I would be very gun shy about taking APIC in an early stage because it's going to have problems, I think. I mean, it is a very complex piece of kit. It's going to be you're talking about new hardware with new device operating systems with a new method of controller strategy with all of this algorithms and everything that's in it. Quality of that, reliability of that code doing exactly what you ask it to do is going to be key. And I think naturally the first version of this software is going to be very modest. It's going to have limited features, and as is right and proper, by the way. And it's not going to be everything that we kind of hope for. I can't imagine how it's going to come out and be awesome on day one and do all these wonderful things that we speculate about. It's going to be very modest in the first versions and then iterate over time.
But look at the target market currently, and I'll infer that the target market are large data center environments with very well-defined needs, and I say that based on the hardware. The Nexus 9000 series and where that seems to fit in as the average enterprise isn't early on going to need the bandwidth that a 9000 can offer. And it is all of the switches in the 9000 line are beasts, by the way. Go read the specs on them. If you just for raw performance numbers, they're quite something. So I would assume that as NCMe's been well known as an entity for quite some time, and I know that they've had many, many customer conversations, even going back to, Cisco Live just earlier this year, US, there was the NCMe suite, Whisper suite, right across from where we were recording, although I think we may have stolen a Danish or two, we didn't actually get any information out of NCMe at that point. Yeah. So we know they've been having customer conversations for quite some time and talking to them about what the product is and getting feedback and so on. I'm imagining, therefore, that the early iteration is going to meet the needs of these Cisco customers that they've been talking to. Mm. But then from there, I am excited about what will get built on this in... Here's one way in which, if you look at the HP SDN solution, maybe HP's got a slight edge in that they are beginning to deliver applications on top of an SDN ecosystem that do something interesting. Whether some of their security applications, they've got an application, for example, that will talk to Microsoft Link and nail up quality of service policies in real time for calls as they're being made. So the their controller, talks to the Microsoft Link servers, learns about calls, and then programs QoS parameters for a network flow, again, in real time. Well, that those are the kind of applications that, looking forward, I think are really going to get enterprises excited and help them to understand, yeah, okay, so we can do this, but to achieve this, you need to have the certain controller, you need to have switches with these capabilities baked in to be able to accomplish these things. And although the early days of ACI, big customers that Insigne's been talking to that have specific needs, and I'm assuming ACI is targeted to meet those needs, I think more and more and more is going to get built on that foundation once they've done what you were implying there earlier on. Give it time to cut its teeth, settle in a bit, get really confident and comfortable with that baseline of functionality early on, and then let's start doing the cool stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Cooler.
That's right, because I guess if you look critically around the marketplace, other people have been delivering SDN controllers for some time now, 6 months, or years in the case of some people. And maybe they've worked out some of the early kinks in their software, and they're going to be further advanced in terms of stability and quality. And whereas Cisco's coming a little later to the market, perhaps, than some other people, and, it could get a little rough there if you're an early adopter, I think.
I think everybody feels that way. Yeah. Certainly the vibe from fellow network engineers is very gun-shy. I see tweets come up every once in a while as people complain about having trouble with this kind of software or that kind of software, and they go, why are we moving to software-defined networks again? Many on this point. You get the point, It's everybody's a little gun-shy at this point. It's going to take some proving of the technology to get everybody comfortable enough to start looking at more serious testing.
Well, you don't have to rush. So this is the first announcement. Like most Cisco product announcements, they announce early, tell you what they're going to be doing, and it could take 6 months for a year for all of this to arrive and be ready. So don't feel that you suddenly have to rush out and do this. Just, put it on your agenda to start tracking in a few months' time when it starts to reach the market. They're saying, if we look at the slides where it talks about delivery, the bigger 9500 chassis don't arrive until the second half of next year. The APIC controller doesn't arrive until Q2, or is it?
I've forgotten. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
Rings a bell, but yeah.
So don't feel that, the world's going to change in the next 3 months and you need to race out and find a new career. Just engage. And maybe keep an eye out for some training sessions or stuff coming up in the next 6 months. I'm sure Cisco usually accompanies these sorts of things. There's one slide in the deck that we received, in the briefing that we received, Ethan, where they talked about training and bringing the certification community forward.
Right.
I'm still waiting for permission to use that slide, and I'll post it shortly about if I do get permission. If I don't, well, obviously I won't. But, Cisco talks about how to grow the certified networking community, and they've got 2.2 million certified individuals, and they see themselves to extend people into one of two streams. One is into DevOps. So there are people who will do plugin development, scripting against APIC, building app profiles and building device packages is what it says here. And the other side is network engineers who consume the APIC as a design, deployment, monitoring, troubleshooting. So there's going to be new jobs in the DevOps side, like coding for APIC as a operational thing. And there's going to be those of us who put APIC into deployment and use it every day. And I think that's where the change is going to be there.
Well, and Cisco Learning Network is fully engaged in the changes here and have already been working on curriculum. I got a briefing from the Cisco Learning folks, maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, about the changes that are coming across the Cisco certification portfolio, right all the way through. And Cisco Learning Network's very clearly identified, if you currently have this role, network operator, network engineer, network architect, those three roles, it's likely to change to be this. And aligning very, very much with what you just said, where there's going to be a coding aspect involved there. And they're mapping your current skills to the additional skills that you will need. By they, I mean the Cisco Learning Network. And so we're going to see some changes in the Cisco certification tracks for sure to begin including software-defined networking skills.
Yeah, I think I might object to the term coding. I think that we will see people who can program Epic, but I doubt if it'll be code. It won't be Python or Ruby or Perl. It'll be something. I think most people will just be able to click the buttons. That's a bit like saying people who use VMware all do coding. And there is a certain percentage of people who do actually write apps against the APIs as part of their operational piece. And that is true. Like, you know, a lot of the VCDXs who are vCloud people, they spend a lot of time writing APIs in various languages to provide enhanced capabilities. But by far, most people spend most of the time just using the standard toolkit, the standard tool chain that's in the vCloud to configure stuff. And I would extrapolate from that and say Epic will have people who are able to code, and that's a very small percentage of the overall certified community who will just use it to get stuff done. You know, solve this problem, get it done.
That's probably fair. I think reflecting back on my Cisco Learning briefing where they talked about this, I think they had picked out a new role of certain enterprises that would be developers. And that function was not expected to be handled by existing engineers. But the engineers were expected to be able to work with developers and understand how the developer's application worked. So, yeah, I think you just made a very worthwhile criticism there that coding's probably maybe not exactly the right word at this point. Yeah. I think time's going to tell. I don't know that I'd be as gun-shy to think of Python and Ruby or whatever the tool may be. Maybe that will become a more commonplace tool for network folks.
Well, it could be. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of APIs that are on Epic, on the software, that you can write to and read from. Some people will learn a language to do that in, and some people will just use what's in Epic and go that way. And I think that's where it is.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, if you know why you need to write an app, you'll know how to write an app.
That's probably true.
If you don't, you'll just design it in such a way that you can get the job done some other way. And that might be the way of the future.
Yeah.
So I do think a lot of the fiddly stuff around OSPF and BGP, a lot of that in the data center will go away. So one of the things that it does tell me is that MPLS in the data center is effectively dead.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Well, it's all going to go... Well, you can't
automate. In the sense that VXLAN, I mean, yeah. VXLAN really takes the place of that. Why do you need MPLS at this point if you're going to do network virtualization or containerization with VXLAN encapsulation?
Yeah. So I think it's very clear that, you know, I think OSPF will still be used in the data center, but BGP, MPLS, spanning tree to some extent, you won't need to know all of the... A lot of the stuff that we know today, you know, all this fancy stuff, a lot of that will fade away as it's replaced by this over time. Now, that's not going to happen. There will be data centers who will stay in legacy mode with spanning tree for the next 10 years, I'm sure. But I think the majority of data centers will move to this one of these SDN platforms. And, you know, no doubt with Cisco's incumbency in most places, a lot of people will choose Epic and application-centric infrastructure to do it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I think some folks that are looking at Catalyst replacements may end up with a Nexus 9000 to do that. Cisco actually positions that as a possible 6500 replacement. So they may end up with the abilities, whether they're looking for them or not.
Well, I did some rough numbers on the back of an envelope the other day. If you figured that if you were building a 1,000 port 10 gig network today, I think I came up with a number using Nexus 9000s based on the numbers in the TCO numbers of around about 350,000 for 1,000 ports.
Of buying Nexus 9K gear as opposed to like 9K with some 10 gig faxes?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can run faxes off these 9Ks as well.
Yeah, so I was just working on, you know, if you bought yourself a bunch of 9300s and 9500, whatever it is, you're going to come up with, say, less than $500,000 for 1,000 Ethernet ports. Well, if you wanted to do that with a Nexus 7000, you're $1 million just for the Nexus 7000 pair in the core. So now I'm just drawing numbers out of the air there, but you know, the Nexus 7000 doesn't come reasonably priced. So there is a significant change in how you look at the market. But you don't get those features, right? No L2. You don't get fabric path. You don't get VLANs between leaf nodes. You don't get no service
OTV,
module.
I imagine, isn't there.
No OTV, no EOMPLS if that's what you're running in your WAN. You won't get 16 levels of QoS or, you know, to be able to implement a, you know, the full 12-layer QoS model, that sort of stuff. Still, that's all too, I mean, that's not a criticism. That's just saying these are two different products.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So architects and designers will struggle to understand the difference. I know I still am. I still don't know which way I would go.
Well, I can tell you that my gut would be go for the simpler, less expensive switch that's got the bandwidth, as opposed to a 7000 that's got, you know, a zillion knobs, most of which I'm unlikely to turn. I wouldn't go to a platform that's got specific knobs unless I needed those knobs, given a different alternative.
We're coming back to that. Yeah, we're coming back to that. If you don't know why you need the knobs, you don't get the knobs.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Whereas today we always get the knobs because we don't know if we'll ever need them. I think if you don't know why you need the Nexus 7000, maybe you should default to the 9. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hard to say. I mean, it depends. I mean, there's so much information we don't know here. We're going off. We're just, you know, talking about what we know from the presentation itself and from the videos we've watched and from the data sheets that are available today, which is, you know, very early, and Cisco does usually take time to bring those papers and design guides to market. So this could all change.
You can say about Cisco here that it's obvious that there's a ton of thought that's gone into this. You really see that they're heading towards, you know, an ultimate goal where they really want the entirety of the data center. And by that, I'm going back to my comment about integrating UCS into the ACI architecture as well. It's very clear that they've got something that they can, they've got a framework here that they built that they really think they can do something with, as opposed to, was it Aon earlier and Sona, which kind of was an idea that never really got any traction and eventually faded away. The application-oriented networking and the software-oriented network architecture, something like that.
Yeah, Sona's still
from years back.
Yeah, well, Sona was meant to support enterprise service buses and weird thing. I mean, I guess the one criticism I have is that Cisco talked a lot about not locking customers in, and I sort of think there's two sides to that. That's correct. They're not. You're not locked into VMware NSX, which is obviously a competitive product, or, you know, Contrail, or, you know, any of the other OpenStack networking at Neutron or any of those types of things. You're not locked into any of those. But I think equally, if you went down this path, you're going to be locked in. There's only space for one controller in the data center. You're not going to have lots of controllers. And whichever one you choose, you need to choose wisely.
Yeah, I mostly agree with that. I think it's plausible that depending on how you've structured your data center, maybe you've got different controllers doing different things. I've heard of that model, and it makes sense to a point. But I think what you're describing is more realistic, where it's exactly what you're saying. You're going to pick a controller that you're going to bet the farm on. You're going to say, my data center is going to be covered by policies as directed by this controller. This is the tool that I'm going to use to write policies and push that policy down into my network.
Yeah.
And that's not a portable function. These are not standardized APIs that everyone's using across the board. This is a differentiated product set. And in the case of ACI, with particular silicon in specific switches to help make it happen, presumably as a scale point. So.
Yeah, I think customers need to be wise. I know I will be looking for how I can make sure that I don't get locked into ACI, or how do I integrate ACI with a wide range of other things, and looking at those APIs to make sure that at least if I'm going to lock myself into that strategy, and it is a lock-in, just like any other choice, you know, like once you go down a single server vendor, that's all x86 software, right? x86 servers. But once you go down the one vendor, you don't normally have a data center full of HP, Dell, IBM. You know, you just have one.
No, right. You get in bed with the vendor, you need to build that relationship, and off you go. Because it's especially if you're doing a lot of buying, it's too difficult to be dealing with a whole lot of different vendors and hardware. You need to have that predictable piece of gear that's sitting in a rack so that when it breaks or it needs to be replaced or you're doing heat and power budgets or whatever it is, there's a predictable element there. So it's easy to buy it. You know it works and it does what you need. And yeah, you don't tend to walk by racks and see just a mix and match of all sorts of different vendors in there. They've picked someone and gone with it.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think that pretty much covers the whole thing. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good opening discussion. So at least folks are aware of our two cents on Cisco ACI. Yep. And but it's the beginning of, I think it's going to be a much longer conversation. And the industry was obviously very keen to get their announcements out ahead of Cisco's. By the industry, I mean Juniper and Arista and someone I'm forgetting also had another big announcement here about this. NSX was announced ahead of ACI. NEC announced Programmable Flow 5 ahead of ACI. Everybody really wanted to get...
Maybe you and I should get together again and talk about all those other things as well. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in those announcements. We could probably do a show with just 10 minutes on each of those, I think.
There's a ton of data out there, and all these other vendors are coming up with strategies that have features and functionality that are similar to what Cisco has announced here. And in other words, every vendor's got a strategy, and that would definitely be a show worth doing because they're not all the same.
And we get it. We're in the middle of a lot of that because of what we're doing with the, you know, vendors are approaching us to talk to us about these things. So we're actually getting fed that information. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it would.
Okay. Well, have a good week, won't you?
Talk. Yeah. I'm back from holiday, but now need to get back into the real world and get some of my writing done and so on. You have a good week too, yeah. Mr. Farrow. Until next time.
See you then.